The Truth News Network.
In a world where Orwell is no longer fiction, Huxley is a documentary, corruption is standard operating procedure, and O'Rourke is the female Ocasio-Cortez, the truth is in short supply. Except here. This is TNN,
the Truth News Network.
And your voice of reality is Dan Newman.
And welcome today back to TruthNewsNetwork.org. It's kind of ironic to have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's name in our opening because she's front and center in today's story, Socialism Coming Soon to the USA. Now up top, let's just do this. Let's just not even think about or talk about Venezuela or Cuba. We're going to talk about realistic socialism, the kind that AOC and Bernie Sanders and others want to come to America. They're calling it democratic socialism. So what is that? What are the differences between democratic socialism and the everyday Walmart version of socialism? What countries on earth are socialist nations? In the age of the hunger for socialism to replace capitalism in the U.S., millennials are crying daily for the latter. But here's a question for you. Do they really know what they're asking for? It is abundantly clear to most that a huge majority of those millennials we see marching in the streets of larger U.S. cities, promoting socialism at the expense of capitalism, have absolutely no idea what the system they're demanding really is, what it does, how it operates, and even if it works at all anywhere. They certainly have no clue as to how the U.S. would look under any kind of socialism. As is normal in every American generation, these young socialist wannabes decided to rename their dream for utopia to democratic socialism. So what is that? And how does it compare to the normal version? Well, let's take a look. Democratic socialism means that this political reality, that's what they call it, the abolition of capitalism to be achieved will be achieved and administered through democratic as opposed to authoritarian means. DSA's website, DSA stands for Democratic Socialist of America, explains it this way, quote, "Democratic socialists believe that both the economy and society should be run democratically to meet public needs, not to make profits for a few. To achieve a more just society, many structures of our government and economy must be radically transformed through greater economic and social democracy so that ordinary Americans can participate in the many decisions that affect our lives. Democratic socialists do not want to create an all-powerful government bureaucracy, but we do not want big corporate bureaucracies to control society either. We believe, they say, that the workers and consumers who are affected by economic institutions should own and control them. Social ownership could take many forms, such as worker-owned cooperatives or publicly owned enterprises managed by workers and consumer representatives." Every DSA member would articulate, if you talk to them, a different vision of the ideal future for America. They all have different ideas. This is probably true of Americans of almost all political stripes. It might be more useful to look at the work that DSA is doing and the policy positions they hold today than to speculate on the specifics of the future world they want to create. The DSA outlines three tactics it uses to shift the power structure in America. Two of them are decrease the influence of money in politics and empower ordinary people in workplaces and the economy. If the wealthy, or as democratic socialist Bernie Sanders likes to say, the one percenters, control the economy and dictate the terms of people's livelihoods, economic equality is impossible. Now that's in his opinion and the opinion of many of the DSA supporters. The DSA supports movements like Fight for 15 and Medicare for All, and backs institutions like unions and cooperatives as vehicles for people to gain more economic power. Some DSA chapters also support public banks, tenants' unions, and advocate for the homeless with the same aim in mind. All of these tactics are ways to seize the means of production, meaning that working class people play a larger role in the labor they perform and deciding the way they are compensated for that work, while bosses profit less from the work of their employees. The third goal that DSA lists is to, and again we quote, restructure gender and cultural relationships to be more equitable. You know, I like it when they use terms like equitable. That's a totally subjective term. So, first thing that pops into my head when I hear that they want to restructure gender and cultural relationships to be more equitable, who decides what's equitable and who doesn't? Just as the rich have more power than those with less money, in the white patriarchal society of the United States, white men have power and privilege that other groups do not enjoy. In mainstream liberal politics, racial, gender, and economic liberation are often discussed as separate issues. Democratic socialists believe that all types of oppression have their root in the capitalist and colonial systems that dominate American life. The only politics to combat these forces, then, is intersectional, meaning that all types of oppression are taken into account. The only way to end this oppression is by a mutual struggle in which various oppressed groups fight on each other's behalf. Democratic socialists also see the struggle for equality as one that transcends national borders. For this reason, the group abhors ICE, stands in solidarity with Palestine, and opposes military imperialism. Among many groups on the left, you'll often hear the phrase, "no war but class war," used to sum up this position. It is obvious to see that the organized socialists in America, who are largely members of the DSA, have very specific ideas of what our nation looks like. It is also obvious that they want a very different America. Of course, it, like many other political ideals that are floated as the perfect utopia in which we all should live, democratic socialists fundamentally demand the complete destruction of capitalism, which they view as pure evil. I cannot imagine what the United States would look like in that world. I have no doubt the destruction of capitalism would initiate a quick and dynamic death of the U.S. economy. But there is more out there in the world of socialism. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to look at plain old socialism. You know, the kind that does so well in the likes of Cuba and Venezuela. Yeah, we're going to talk about those and even some few other socialist countries on Earth. That's just ahead. Truth News Network.
From Krakow to Grand Island, Milan to Hanoi, this is TNN, the Truth News Network.
Society says we should only have tacos with the gang on Tuesday, but Taco Bell doesn't play by the rules.
Step away from the tacos!
With Taco Bell Party Packs, gangs are having tacos any day of the week, even Sunday. So whether your gang is soft, crunchy, or straight up locos, it's time to come together and fight for tacos any night. It's Taco Anarchy. Can you feel it?
Are they dance fighting?
Rebel against Tuesday tradition with Taco Bell Party Packs. Pick it up or get it delivered for the whole crew.
In the clown car of the deep state, you will never find a greater den of scum and villainy. You need a hero. Here again, blaster in hand, is Dan Newman.
Well, I gotta be totally honest. They took my blaster away from me. But let's go back to what we're talking about today, and let's just get right to plain old socialism. Socialism is the big lie of the 21st century. While it promised prosperity, equality, and security, it delivered poverty, misery, and tyranny. Equality was achieved only in the sense that everyone was equal in his or her misery. That's right, misery. In the same way that a Ponzi scheme or chain letter initially succeeds but eventually collapses, socialism may show early signs of success. But any accomplishments quickly fade as the fundamental deficiencies of central planning emerge. It's the initial illusion of success, that gives government intervention its pernicious, seductive appeal. In the long run, socialism has always proven to be a formula for tyranny and misery. Socialism ignores incentives. Think about this. A pyramid scheme is ultimately unsustainable because it's based on faulty principles. Likewise, collectivism is unsustainable in the long run because it's a flawed theory. Socialism doesn't work because it is not consistent with fundamental principles of human behavior. The failure of socialism in countries around the world can be traced to one critical defect. It is a system that ignores incentives. Under socialism, incentives either play a minimal role or are ignored totally. In a capitalist economy, incentives are of the utmost importance. Market prices, the profit and loss system of accounting, and private property rights provide an efficient, interrelated system of incentives to guide and direct economic behavior. Capitalism is based on the theory that incentives matter. Under socialism, incentives either play a minimal role or ignore totally. A centrally planned economy without market prices or profits, where property is owned by the state, is a system without an effective incentive mechanism to direct economic activity. By failing to emphasize incentives, socialism is a theory inconsistent with human nature and is therefore doomed to fail. Socialism is based on the theory that incentives don't matter. And in human nature, folks, they do. Pure socialism. In a radio debate several months ago with a Marxist professor from the University of Minnesota, the obvious failures of socialism around the world in Cuba, Eastern Europe, and China, and Venezuela were pointed out. At the time of that debate, Haitian refugees were risking their lives to try to get to Florida in homemade boats. Why was it that people were fleeing Haiti and traveling almost 500 miles by ocean to get to the evil capitalist empire, when they were only 50 miles away from the workers' paradise called Cuba? If perfection really were an available option, the choice of economic and political systems would be irrelevant. The Marxists on that panel admitted that many socialist countries around the world were failing. However, according to him, the reason for their failure is not that socialism is deficient, but that the socialist economies are not practicing pure socialism. The perfect version of socialism would work. It's just the imperfect socialism that doesn't work. Marxists like to compare a theoretically perfect version of socialism with practical, sometimes imperfect capitalism, which allows them to claim that socialism is superior. If perfection really were an available option, the choice of economic and political systems would be totally irrelevant. In a world with perfect beings and infinite wealth, any economic or political system, socialism, capitalism, fascism, or communism, would work perfectly. However, the choice of economic and political institutions is crucial in an imperfect universe with imperfect beings and limited resources. In a world of scarcity, it's essential for an economic system to be based on a clear incentive structure to promote economic efficiency. The real choice we face is between sometimes imperfect capitalism, but capitalism no less, and imperfect socialism. Given that choice, the evidence of history overwhelmingly favors capitalism as the greatest wealth-producing economic system available. The strength of a capitalism can be attributed to an incentive structure based upon three P's. Number one, prices determined by market forces. Number two, a profit and loss system of accounting. And number three, private property rights. The failure of socialism can be traced to its neglect of these three incentive-enhancing components. Prices. The price system in a market economy guides economic activity so flawlessly that most people don't appreciate its importance. Market prices transmit information about relative scarcity and then efficiently coordinate economic activity. The economic content of prices provides incentives that promote economic efficiency. Profits and losses. Socialism also collapsed because of its failure to operate under a competitive profit and loss system of accounting. A profit system is an effective monitoring mechanism which continually evaluates the economic performance of every business enterprise. The firms that are the most efficient and most successful at serving the public interest or rewarded with, yep, profits. Firms that operate inefficiently and fail to serve the public interest are penalized with losses. And then the third, private property rights. A third fatal defect of socialism is its blatant disregard for the role of private property rights in creating incentives that foster economic growth and development. The failure of socialism around the world is a tragedy of commons on a global scale. The tragedy of the commons refers to the British experience of the 16th century, when certain grazing lands were communally owned by villages and were made available for public use. The land was quickly overgrazed and eventually became worthless as villagers exploited the communally owned resource. When assets are publicly owned, there are no incentives in place to encourage wise stewardship. I'm sorry, folks. We're all good people. That's fundamentally what socialism is based on. And we all have, as our primary concern, the good of the whole. None of us are selfish. And you and I both know that's not a reality. And then there's incentives. Incentives matter too. Without the incentives of market prices, profit and loss accounting, and well-defined property rights, socialist economies stagnate and wither. The economic withering that occurs under socialism is a direct consequence of its neglect of economic incentives. No abundance of natural resources can even compensate a country for its lack of an efficient system of incentives. Look at Russia, for example. Russia is one of the world's wealthiest countries in terms of natural resources. It has some of the world's largest reserves of oil, natural gas, diamonds, and gold. Its valuable farmland, lakes, rivers, and streams stretch across a land area that encompasses 11 time zones. Yet, Russia remains poor. Natural resources are helpful, but the ultimate resources of any country are the unlimited resources of its people, human resources. I'm not very sure there are winners in socialism, but there certainly are losers. Socialism leads to the politicization of society. Hardly anything can be worse for the production of wealth. Socialism, at least its Marxist version, says its goal is complete equality. The Marxists observed that once you allow private property in the means of production, you allow differences. If I own resource A, then you do not own it, and our relationship towards resource A becomes different and unequal. By abolishing private property in the means of production with one stroke, says the Marxist, everyone becomes co-owner of everything. This reflects everyone's equal standing as a human. The reality, though, is much different. Declaring everyone a co-owner of everything only nominally solves differences in ownership. It doesn't solve the real underlying problem. There remain differences in the power to control what is done with resources. In capitalism, the person who owns a resource can also control what's done with it. In a socialized economy, this isn't true because there's no longer any owner. Nonetheless, the problem of control remains. So, who's going to decide what is to be done with what? Under socialism, there is only one way. People settle their disagreements over the control of property by superimposing one will upon another. As long as there are differences, people will settle them through political means. If people want to improve their income under socialism, they got to move toward a more highly valued position in the hierarchy of caretakers. And that takes what? Political might and political talent. Under such a system, people will have to spend less time and effort developing their productive skills and more time and effort improving their political talents and increasing their political power. As people shift out of their roles as producers and users of resources, we find that their personalities change. They no longer cultivate the ability to anticipate situations of scarcity, to take up productive opportunities, to be aware of technological possibilities, to anticipate changes in consumer demand, and develop strategies of marketing. They no longer have to be able to initiate, to work, and to respond to the needs of others. Instead, people develop the ability to assemble public support for their own position and their own opinion through means of persuasion, demagoguery, and intrigue through promises, bribes, and yes, even threats. different people rise to the top under socialism than under capitalism. The higher on the socialist hierarchy you look, the more you'll find people who are too incompetent to do the job they are supposed to do. It's no hindrance in a caretaker politician's career to be dumb, insolent, inefficient, and uncaring. He only needs superior political skills. This too contributes to the impoverishment of society. So let's wrap this up. Plain and simple, I'm going to give you a really deep thought, so listen closely. Folks, socialism ain't going to work. It works nowhere on earth and has always been unsustainable in any versions as has been tried. And it certainly won't work in the U.S. Why? Former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher in 2007 said this: socialist governments traditionally do make a financial mess. They, socialists, always run out of other people's money. It's quite a characteristic of them. You know, it's surprising to me that democratic socialists like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or she's now better known as AOC, Bernie Sanders, and others don't understand that capitalism rewards those who work hard, work smart, and build businesses with which other Americans want to work for or work with. That's the main difference between socialism and capitalism. Under socialism, entrepreneurship is dead. There's no incentive. Ingenuity is dead. And working hard to get ahead, well, that's dead too. Making it as simple as possible, in case you didn't get it just a few seconds ago, socialism ain't gonna work. Well, I think you get my opinion, but you also got a lot of facts today, got some definitions. So when you hear AOC or Bernie talking about, oh, we're not socialist, we're democratic socialist, we believe in democratic socialism, now you know the difference. Really? What's that saying that came out of the 2008 presidential campaign? Hey, you can put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig. And that's a wrap on today's story about socialism and socialist light. Thank you for joining us here at Truth News Network. We're always glad when you join us, and we look at our government, we look at our society, and we look at our people. Folks, we live in a great nation. And our thanks today for all of those who stormed the beaches of Normandy, Omaha Beach, and kept us safe from a fascist and totalitarian government of Germany in World War II, 75 years ago today. Thank you all for your service, and thank you folks for being here with us at truthnewsnetwork.org.
Because to fight the deep state's cover-up of Hillary's crimes, you need the light of truth. There's TNN.